Hello, friends, and welcome to Everyday Truth with Kurt Skelly. We're here to show that the Bible is relevant to your life every single day, and we're glad you joined us here for the conversation. We're studying the book of Romans and learning how the power of the gospel impacts every part of our lives. Now, let's join Kurt for today's episode.
Hello, friends, and welcome back. So glad you joined us today in our study of Romans chapter 9. And I wanted to do something maybe a little bit off course today, and that is to give a little bit of a review of where we have been so far. Obviously, a debated topic like Calvinism or a debated passage like Romans chapter 9, it's debated for a reason. And I think there's been a lot of confusion from this chapter. And sometimes the confusion is we study it so minutely that we don't see the larger narrative, the narrative of the book itself, the narrative of the Bible, which is God's plan to rescue mankind. You think about the Bible in four words: creation, the fall, redemption, and then consummation or recreation. And so the lion's share of the Bible is God's rescue plan, the redemptive narrative. And Romans is such a great example of God's redemptive narrative. Mankind is sinful. He is deservedly judged by God. He has resisted the righteousness of God. He has chosen, even though his conscience condemns him, and even though the law of God to the Jew has highlighted that sin and condemned that person, there's nothing he can do. We're not saved by works. There's no human effort that can in any way absolve us from the guilt of the sin we've already committed, of who we are, Romans chapter 5. And yet, what did God do? God provided righteousness, gift righteousness, in the person of his son, Jesus, who came and did what we could not do. He lived the life of righteousness. He died upon the cross in our place as our substitute. He rose victorious over sin and death and the grave. And we can, through the good news of that message, receive the gift righteousness of Jesus Christ, the righteousness of God revealed in the gospel. What a marvelous story. And so it is a story of God's goodness, of his grace, and how the grace of God, embodied most eloquently in the person of Jesus Christ, can be accessed by faith, not by works. So the book of Romans is a wonderful treatise on that subject. And Romans chapter 9 is right within that context. It's the context of, but wait a minute, didn't God choose to inaugurate his plan for the salvation of the world through Abraham? Remember Genesis chapters 1 through 11, God created the world, mankind sinned, rebelled, God destroyed the world, Noah found grace, and then that generation of people after Noah, those generations, they too turned from God, and they became so self-sufficient, they built a tower, the Tower of Babel. And what did God do? He divided the languages, and therefore the nations. People gathered around their language group. And what did God do in Genesis 12? He inaugurated a plan by which those nations could be saved. That's the promise to Abraham, that in thee shall all nations of the earth be blessed. And so he elected Abraham, selected him for this special service, and selected the children of Abraham, not all of them, as we saw and shall see again today, to be the curators of this message, to reflect the glory of God to a lost and dying world, to the nations. In large part, Israel did not do a good job, did she? And yet God was faithful. And God, the plan of God moved forward, not because Israel necessarily intended for it to be so, willed it to be so, and not because Israel was particularly faithful, her works. No, God did it according to his promise, not according to their intentions, not according to their works. God still made good on his covenant to select Abraham's offspring to be the curators of the gospel message and ultimately the seed of Abraham, Jesus Christ himself, by whom all the nations of the world would have access to the salvation that comes only through Jesus. So that's the big picture. In Romans chapter 9, the Apostle Paul, and chapter 10 and chapter 11, the Apostle Paul is making the case that God has been faithful to his promise historically. That's why Romans 9 is a history lesson about the patriarchs and about the Exodus and about some of the prophecies that were made in the Old Testament, that God has been consistent in keeping his promise that I have selected certain ones, exclusively selected certain people in the minority so that all could be saved or have the opportunity to be saved. So Paul says in Romans 9, I have this great burden for my people, this great passion for my people. I want them to be saved. I could wish that myself were accursed. I mean, after all, these are the people whom God elected. He gave them all these special things, the adoption and the promises and the glory and the service of God and all those privileges of verse number 4. And yet it seems as if the nation of Israel in my day, said the Apostle Paul, and the readers, the Roman readers, it would seem to the Jews that by and large, the Jewish nation has rejected Messiah, and only a very few people have received him. So did God's promise fail? God promised to use Israel. She would be the champion of this message, this plan of God, this purpose that God had. And it seems as if the exact opposite is true. As the Gentiles are readily receiving, and the Jews seem to be, next to the reception of the Gentiles, reluctant. So what's going on? And Romans chapter 9 and verse 6 forward is the Apostle Paul showing that God's plan is every bit as much in effect now as it ever has been. He has always moved his plan forward by his promise and by his mercy, not by the efforts of people and not by the intentions of his people. If that were the case, it would have failed long ago. So how does he make that case? Well, that's what we've talked about. So he makes the case, first of all, that not everybody that is called Israel is actually Israel. Just because somebody claims to be the child of Abraham, of the lineage of Abraham, like many people in Paul's day were saying, hey, we're saved because of our lineage. And remember, John the Baptist told them, no, God is able to make the rocks his children. No, your lineage is not your ticket. And so what does he say here in Romans 9? He says, hey, even at the beginning, God chose Isaac, not Ishmael. Even though they were both the lineage of, children of Abraham, one was a child of the flesh. There was no faith involved in Abraham and Sarah's, or Abraham and Hagar's production of Ishmael. No faith involved there, just works. But with Isaac, he's the child of faith. So what's God showing? He's showing that my plan goes forward by grace, by my mercy, but by my promise, and by the faith that people place in it. And so God gave Abraham and Sarah a son in accordance with their faith that he believed God, and that belief was accounted unto him for righteousness. That's what Romans chapter 4 is all about, as it highlights the testimony of Abraham and of David. So we see it in Isaac and in Ishmael, and then we see it in Esau and in Jacob. When God said to Rebekah, what's going on in your womb is you're having twins. These twins are fighting. And that's a presage of the fact that nations will arise out of them. And the elder, Esau, will serve the younger. Now, that is non-traditional. And certainly would not be the case in the Jewish tradition where the elder child got the double portion. The elder child received the patriarchal authority. The elder child got the blessing. It was the elder child. And yet God was reversing that, wasn't he? And God was saying, I am making a choice to bring my plan along based upon my promise, not according to works. I'm making this choice before any works are done. So that doesn't mean that God is making a choice for their individual salvation. No, you'd have to eisegetically read into the text to come up with that. No, all God is saying with Esau and Jacob is that he made choices, selections, election about who would be the ones that would carry forth the plan. His plan to save the world, the line of Messiah. And he chose Jacob because not because of works, but because of God's plan. So there in Malachi chapter 1, he used that same promise that, hey, it's Jacob that I have covenanted with, whom I've loved. That's the covenant word. And it's Esau whom I have hated. Not hated in the sense that we use the word, but the point there was in Malachi, it seemed as if Israel was this small, weak nation, and Edom, the children of Esau, were the strong nation that looked to almost be enveloping Israel. And God said, no, my promise is still true, not according to your strength, not according to your works, and certainly not according to your godliness, because the people in Malachi's day were far from right with God. Just read the book of Malachi. The point was, God's promise was intact. I'm doing something. I'm doing something here. I'm keeping my promise. It had nothing to do with God choosing arbitrarily Jacob to be saved or Esau to be reprobated. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And even the most ardent Calvinist would admit that the Old Testament passages have nothing to do with the election to the effectual call of individual salvation. No, they say, well, it's the principle. You know, God did elect them to be the curators of the plan of God. And that same principle, that God is allowed to choose who he wants, they can't even make the case that that's what the Old Testament scriptures that Paul is citing mean. You see, the point here is God is making a point. And the point here is I've kept my promise. I kept it to Abraham. I kept it to Rebekah. I kept it through Isaac. I kept it through Jacob. In fact, the interesting thing is for those that would argue that, well, you know, Esau is hated. He's damned to go to hell. Is it not interesting that the Bible makes it clear that God predicted the salvation in part of the Ishmaelites, of the Egyptians, of the Edomites? In fact, the prophecy about Edom's salvation in Amos chapter 9 was used by Pastor James at the Jerusalem Council in Acts chapter 15 as a buttress for the fact that the gospel needs to go to all the world, including the Gentiles. And so far from God arbitrarily selecting some people to go to heaven or to go to hell, no, the passage in Romans is all about God's purpose for Israel. And God's purpose for Israel has not been abrogated. He's using her. And that promise continues forward, not because they are willing and not because they have earned it through their works, but because God made a promise. And those that enter into that promise through humility and faith are God's Israel. That's what it means to be a son of Abraham, to follow the faith of Father Abraham. That's Romans 4. That's Galatians 3. And that, my friends, is Romans 9. Got to do a time check here. Oh, my. Look, this is why I get into this. And we're going to have to quit there. I am so sorry. We're 14 minutes in. We gave you a little review from verses 1 through 13. Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. We're going to jump into 14 and review what we've talked about up through verse 18 on the next episode. And I know this might seem redundant to some of you, but I think it's important that we get the flow in our minds. So we're going to quit there. Have a great day in the Lord. We'll see you again next time. God bless you, my friends.
Thanks for taking time to listen. If you enjoy Everyday Truth, take a moment to subscribe or share the podcast with a friend. Until next time, God bless.